This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Well, you know, this closes out our identity training series tonight, so I'm kind of excited about that. You know, it's been a wonderful series, and so really looking forward to where we're headed from here. We also get really excited to hear kind of the effect of identity in people's lives and hear the stories of what's going on with people and how the Lord's really, really meeting them in their identity. We ask him to come up and share with her a little bit about, you know, what God's done for her and this whole thing of identity in her life and just come up and share a little bit. So you guys give Kim a hand. Yay! I thought I'd get it over with so you can enjoy the rest of the night here.
A year ago, I probably have to say that you would find me in very, if you could find me in a church, would be in the back. And at one point in my life, I was ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It's not an easy thing to say.
So anyways, in my later years, I don't know if it's a, it's still hard for me to understand, but in my relationships, looking back, I still carried that with me through most of my adulthood, relying on the emotions of the person that I was with, and my day was based on how their day was, my day was based on how they thought of me, and it traumatized me if I thought that something was wrong with the way they perceived me. And I look back now, and my whole entire life and my relationships were based on human man, on human being. And finally, it came to a point where I went through, this is the first time I've actually been able to say this beyond the privacy of my own walls. So after many relationships and going through so many problems, you know, my worst fear, you know, because of being alone when I was a child, my worst fear was being alone as an adult and having to do things on my own. And there came a point in my life where that happened. And it was so devastating to me that I cursed the sun when I woke up and I saw it shining through my window. And I cursed God for letting this sun shine. And I did this day after day, and I used a lot of outside sources that I thought would comfort me, and one of those things being alcohol. And I relied on alcohol for a lot of my years, my adult life. And then that turned into, it needed something to rely on alcohol, which would be all day long. I felt like I couldn't function without it. One night I decided I was so tired of watching all the movies, and I'm like, nothing satisfies me. None of this sounds good. And I watched this one movie, I think it was about the singer Rich Mullins, and I was holding a glass of wine as I was watching this movie, and as I watched it, I set it down on my counter because I felt I couldn't even be in the same room as that glass of wine, and I couldn't understand what was going on. And after I set it down on the counter, I went in the room and I continued watching it, and it had spoken so much to me. The conviction made me angry, and I thought, this is ridiculous. How can a movie like this have such a hold on me? And I thought it was the movie, and I thought, and I shut my laptop, and I'm going to go out there, and I'm just going to just drink this glass of wine because this is crazy. And I couldn't understand that, and I went out to the counter, and I was getting ready to grab that glass of wine, and my hand couldn't touch it. And I could not understand what was going on. And I went back into my bedroom, and I sat on the bed, and I was so angry, and I couldn't understand what was going on, what was happening. And I fell on the floor crying, just sobbing and crying. And I finally came to the point where I said, okay, God, I don't understand what's going on, but okay, I can't do this anymore. I say okay, and I was laying on the floor, and I was crying, And all of a sudden, and I never believed in this before, all of a sudden, very quietly, I heard, "Now let me work in you." And I sat up and I looked around because I thought, okay, I know I didn't drink enough to start hearing voices, but where is this coming from? And I looked around and I thought, okay, could I have heard something? Nobody's in my room. Nobody's here. And I sat there and I thought, well, it couldn't have been my own voice because I would never say that to myself. And then all of a sudden, it became reality to me. And I hung on to those words. Now let me work in you. All he was waiting for me was to say, okay. That's all he wanted me to do. That's all I had to do. I didn't have to do anything big. I didn't have to go to a Bible school. I didn't do anything. All I had to say was, okay. And he said, now let me work in you. And from that night forward, my life has been changed. And as each day goes by, my love, God, for his understanding and who I am in God and him in me has grown stronger in a way that I can't even explain. Some days my mind is still so blown away by this. Sometimes even as I'm driving or the most basic thing that I'm doing, my mind can barely comprehend this. And I don't ever want to lose that. I don't ever want to go back to who I was because I love this. I really, really love this. And the fact is that if it can happen to me, it can happen to anybody. I heard this song one time. I just want to say it really quickly. But I heard this song and I could not believe the words to this. And I know you guys have probably heard it. Mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, telling those lies, pointing out your flaws. That isn't who you are. That isn't who you are. It might be hard to hear, but let me tell you, dear, if you could see what I can see, I know you would believe that isn't who you are. There's more to who you are. So when it's late, you're wide awake, too much to take, don't you dare forget that in the pain you can be brave. Hear me say, I see you dressed in white, every wrong made right. I see a rose in bloom at the sight of you. Oh, so priceless, irreplaceable, unmistakable, incomparable. Darling, it's beautiful. I see it all in you. Oh, so priceless. No matter what you've heard, this is what you're worth. More than all the money or the diamonds and pearls. Oh, this is who you are. Yeah, this is who you are. So when it's late, you're wide awake, too much to take. Don't you dare forget that in the pain, you can be brave. Hear me say, I see you dressed in white, every wrong made right. I see a rose in bloom at the sight of you. Oh, so priceless, irreplaceable, unmistakable, incomparable. Darling, it's beautiful. I see it all in you. Oh, so priceless. Sisters, we can start again. Give honor till the end. Love, we can start again. Brothers, we can start again. Give honor till the end. Yeah, we can start again. I see you dressed in white, every wrong made right. I see a rose in bloom at the sight of you. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Kim, thank you. Wow, that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. Who wants to hear more of that story? And I do. So I hope that you'll give us some more chapters of where you've been. That's really something. Thank you. So we're going to kind of land this plane, just kind of talk a little bit. In the healthy identity counselor training, you know, we've approached this as training for us who are working with people in recovery as well as, you know, ourselves in recovery. That's definitely a description of me where I'm in recovery and I'm also helping people in recovery. And so we kind of track through that. So I think the podcast is up. You know, if you want to get in on all of it or if you missed any of it, they're all on there. So anyway, we started off with the word worth on a board. If you just imagine that word, worth, and you hear that a lot here because it's a real heavy-duty basic that we got to have. And so the word worth really consists of our need for security, our need for significance, a need that we have to be loved, just at our very core, a need to be loved, knowing I'm loved, super important, knowing I'm accepted, that I'm forgiven, I need that, and I need it every single day. I also need to know that I'm important and that I matter. God has a plan for me, things for me to do. So we talked a little bit about that, and we talked about us being challenged with kind of this homework of asking God to show you three areas. We challenged everybody to have God show them where they are living out of "I'll be okay if," that mentality. "I'll have worth if." And you'll find categories forming that "I'll have worth, security and significance if." You'll see categories forming around our looks, around our achievements, where we are in life, our status, that kind of stuff. Relationships, performance, it's all going to start coming together and asking God to show us. And we're constantly catching ourselves of operating out of that "I'll be okay if," you know, you're doing this for me, or you stop doing that, you start, you know, having this in your life, whatever, and really become aware of the if mentality. And the reason that's so important is because when I say "I'll be okay if," "I'll be loved if," that means right now I'm not. Like right now I'm not okay, but I will be okay if. And see, the lie there, it totally denies the gospel, totally denies the work of the cross that is so powerful. And so then we marched along in our series, and along this series we've laughed, we've cried. Oh, all right, maybe we just cried. But we asked, on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you find yourself? You know, 10 being this shining righteousness of Christ, like just absolute perfection. If you can imagine what that looks like in the spirit, like a spirit being that's absolute perfection, just brilliance, what would that look like? A 10, right? And so that's a 10, 1 being worthless, just totally a bottom feeder, you know, running around a little hyena. So on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being worthless, 10 being the shining righteousness perfection, where are you at? And I don't mean mentally what you know. I mean, what does your heart say? And so for me, on most days, I might be along, you know, a 4 or a 5, maybe a 6 on really good days, because my behavior points out what I really believe about me in my actions. And so we asked that question to really nail some things down. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what does God say you are? You know, if you're a believer, if you've put your faith in the cross, you know, what is God and his perspective? When he looks at you, what is God saying you are? See, God's saying, "I'm a 10. God's saying, I'm giving you my righteousness, my status, I'm giving you. Right? I am raising you to my level and joining you to myself. That's what I'm giving you." So God's saying I'm a 10, but I'm saying I'm a 5. You see the problem? And so with our counseling, where we're working with people, that's the problem we're up against, is that perspective of how I see me and how God, what he says about me. I'm really learning to walk in what God says is true. You know, for me, when I was a little boy, just very similar to what Kim was saying, you know, if I was an equation, you just add me up like a math equation, that equation would add up to 0. I was a big 0, and I really felt 0, just a big nothing. Add me up, nothing. I'm a nothing. And I really, really believe that. And so I would attach deep desires and longings for love and affection, deep desires to be important and to have power and all these things, to these fantasies and these daydreams and sometimes people and different things. So that's why it's so important for us to really look into what's in the reach. When I'm reaching for these drugs, when I'm reaching for this bottle, when I'm reaching for this fantasy, when I'm chasing this down, what's in this reach? What's in it? What's the motivation behind the things I'm reaching towards? And so my love tank was really at a zero. And, you know, people who have a love tank that's a zero, you're just ravenous for love and affection. I was just so hungry for love and affection. Those people are just prime candidates for addiction, prime candidates for extreme abuse and dysfunction and codependence, to be attached to something that gives us that. And so when I discovered chemicals and drugs, boy, I tell you right now, and I talked about that for the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about it, but it just lit me up like a Christmas tree. I mean, I was like, this is it. I found it. Like, this does for my brain and my body. I feel loved. I feel all these feelings. I feel powerful. I feel connected. And I don't even need anybody to have it. I mean, this was clearly my answer. But how that turned on me and led me to a place of becoming a real monster, because all I wanted was more. Obviously, I'd want more of that. And I needed more. My body needed more. My mind was obsessed with more. And I became powerless. And we really talked about that over these last 2 weeks. And so I was really at a place where, and I've been here several times in my life, where I sat in front of a substance abuse counselor, and he basically added up, and I've said all this before, I'm just kind of recapping this glorious track we've been on. But he basically added up the drugs I was using, how long I'd been using it, the amount I was using, you know, when I'd started, all these things, and he kind of added it up and basically laid it on me. Dude, you have a 99.9% chance that you're never, ever, ever going to recover. Like he said, basically, you're not going to recover. The odds of you recovering are almost zero without any doubt. Like I can tell you right now, people that are doing what you're doing and are where you are, they don't recover. And it really, really freaked me out, okay? But it was good for me to hear. Like, it was really good for me to hear the reality of what was going on with me. And when we're out there using, and we have a plan, and we're scheming, and we're dodging and weaving, you know, we just think, I'm going to get it. When I really want to quit, I'll do it, and all these things. And the reality of what he was telling me, he's telling me, dude, you are not going to recover. I knew I needed, at that point, recovery. And that I needed to make a genius move, right? I sit with more men than women, but I sit and they're in a lot of trouble oftentimes. And their wives are going to leave them. The law's on them. And they're really freaking out. And I tell them, dude, you need to do what we call making a hero move. You need to take massive action. You need to take some bold, hardcore, heroic steps. You need to make a genius move, right? This is where I knew I was. And I had been definitely displaying the late stages of addiction in my life. I had sores all over my body. You can ask my wife here how horrific it was, where I was at. Paid a big toll physically for where I was at. But I needed to make a genius move. And the 12 steps contain this genius move. And I knew that in this process that I was going to enter, that I needed to be 100% fully committed to the process. I needed to put all my weight, I am going to recover. Like, no game plan. I'm going to get some people around me that will speak into my life. I'm going to hear them. And I'm going to recover. And I'm going to give 100% of my life to recovery. And so I tell you, the genius of the 12 steps is in our willpower, my willpower, like let's just say this is my willpower. Our willpower is not designed, and there's a whole bunch of people that think along these lines, and you can think differently, it's totally fine. But our willpower is not designed to go around being super, super massively strong. It's not designed to be everything I rely on. to resist, to pursue. Like, my willpower is not supposed to be a muscle that I create to be this freakish thing. It's designed for it to be very beautiful. It's designed to do one thing, and it's to be given over to a higher power. For me to do a step three, like this has been my representation of God's will and His care, His plan, His genius design, His absolute love for Stan. He loves Stan. And God loves Stan. And He wants me to give Him my will. I had taken this will and I had put it in the dirt. I drug it through these terrible, horrible, shameful places. I sat in a jail cell with my will and my life, right? And I can resist some things, but it's very limited in its strength, right? And so God wanted me to do a step three, which was to make a decision to turn my will and my life to God's care. Like, this is what He wanted me to do. And I tell you, this is a powerful moment for people. And you could do this in an area of your life where you've had enough, where you're really sick of it, and you've had enough, and you're ready. I was ready. Guys, I was ready. My wife was ready to make this decision. And this is a powerful thing spiritually. And we were reading this week how in heaven, they celebrate and throw in a massive celebration, just an eruption. I mean, imagine more angels than you could ever count. Imagine the scene in heaven where they throw this thunderous party and celebration. Like, imagine what that must be like. And there's only, let me see, 5 areas that we found where heaven thunders and celebrates, right? One of them was when God created light. In the book of Job, talks about the angels just throwing this huge celebration where light entered the world. The next was the birth of Jesus, where like the NASA team in the control room, you know, he's touched down, he's made it, the Savior's born, and they all erupted in incredible celebration. The next one is when the church finally comes together as a bride into heaven, like when heaven and the bride meet together. The next one was when Jesus finally puts under His feet all of His enemies, and that's done. Those are huge things, right? Those are massive things. But guess what the fifth one is? When one Stan Bourne, sitting in his jail cell, right? One Stan Bourne with sores, right? Right? One Stan Bourne with sores. Right? One Stan Bourne hurting and broken and addicted. When one person, it says, when one sinner repents. And that means changing your mind, changing your thinking, turning up 180. I take my will and my life. When I do this, and I made this little weak little frail step, and I turn my life over to the care of God. Boom. I mean, it just erupts. Do I experience that? No, I mean, it's not happening here. It's in heaven, right? I mean, just this giant thunderous applause. But I want you to know, for the first time in my life, when I turned my will in life and it was out of my hands, I honestly, and I do that all the time at home, and I just went, thank you. Like, thank you, God. It's out of my hands, right? I don't have to stress anymore. It's not on me anymore, right? Now it's His plan. Now it's Him. It's not me. He's in charge. He's the boss. Okay, so I've been going over this. We went through this step three. It's such a beautiful thing, the step three, guys, and I really kind of have stayed on this with this training. But it's kind of like this amazing thing that happens. It's an exchange. And you find yourself, when you do a step three, you give Him your life. Guess what He does? He gives you His. Like, is this crazy? Like you actually find yourself at an altar. And just like Kim said, he was asking her to say yes. What was it he was asking you to say? Okay. Let me work in you. And he wanted her to say, okay. Wow, that was so beautiful. I just felt God all over that. And it's just like we're standing at an altar and you're saying, I do. You're giving him your life. He's giving you his life. Like, how crazy is that, right? It's called marriage. And God is actually standing here next to Stan Bourne, sores and all, and he's in a covenant marriage saying, dude, I am never going to leave you. I am never going to forsake you. I am with you to the very end. I do. Right? It's finished. Me and you are married. I mean, I tell you right now, who benefits here? Right? I mean, if a real poor person marries a king, who's benefiting? Whose life changes drastically? Right? So this is kind of what we experience in salvation. And Ephesians talks about what God gets out of us, too. He gets a lot out of you saying, I do. I mean, he's just thrilled about it. We don't probably talk about that enough. But at this point, I, sores and all, married now into this family, into this very royal place, I enter into, and I won't read all this, but we enter into an Isaiah 61 healing. Now the exchange really begins as I enter into this family. And so, hear this. It says, he will give a crown of beauty for ashes. That's what I had, right? I had ashes, right? He's going to give me a crown of beauty. Joyous blessing instead of mourning. Festive praise instead of despair. And in their righteousness, they will be like great oaks that the Lord has planted for his own glory. Check it out. It says, this is talking about me. This is talking about you. You'll be called priests of the Lord, ministers of our God. You will feed on the treasures of the nations, boast in their riches. Instead of shame and dishonor, you'll enjoy a double share of honor. You'll possess a double portion of prosperity in the land. Everlasting joy will be yours. I'm skipping through Isaiah 61 here, just reading some of these marriage vows and some of these things he wants to give us. I love it down here. It says, I'm overwhelmed with joy in the Lord my God, for he has dressed me with the clothing of salvation, draped me in a robe of righteousness. I'm like a bridegroom in his wedding suit, or a bride with her jewels. The sovereign Lord will show his justice to the nations of the world. Everyone will praise him. His righteousness will be like a garden in early spring, with plants springing up everywhere. In other words, life. Like life will begin to come out of mine. Now, let me ask you this question then. On a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at now? As you see this exchange, like where are you at now? Like, I don't know about you. It doesn't take a whole lot of time to spend here where now I'm getting up to about maybe a 7 or an 8, right? And if I'm a 7 or a 8, as I'm how I'm seeing me, I'm getting closer to the way God sees me in my marriage, in this exchange that we've had. How about your worth as a person? Like, where are you at now? And see, this is really, really what we're after. And so I entered a new lifestyle. And so this is the coolest thing is in Romans 6, it says, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Does anyone know what it says? God forbid. God forbid. And then it says, how can you? Don't you know? Have you forgotten? You're united with Christ. Like, it talks about how can you? How can you? And it brings to mind last Sunday, our daughter Morgan, our youngest daughter Morgan, packed up all of her boxes, taped them all up, and she moved to Kauai. She moved to Kauai from here. And she got off the plane, got some flip-flops, entered a brand new land. Here she is on the beach. I mean, this is crazy picture she's sending us. She's entered a whole new story. She's now living in Kauai. And wouldn't it be funny if I called her and said, so are you going to live now like you live in North Pole? You know what I mean? I mean, what if I said that real serious? Like, are you going to live now the same way you lived here in Alaska? She'd be like, Dad, like, how can I? Like, did you forget the packing? Did you forget putting me on the plane? Don't you know I'm citizen of a new land and a brand new life? Like, it would be that crazy. And this is what Romans 6 is really saying at its very heart, is for me to enter this new lifestyle of giving him my life, and he has given me his divine nature within me. It's the same craziness to say, now I'm going to go back into all my old... He's saying, have you forgotten? Like, don't you remember, like, this marriage, this I do, the altar? So Glenna and I, at this point, I'm entering into rest as warfare. This is something very hard for people with addiction to do. What do I do when the dealer calls? I rest. I don't respond. What about a boring weekend? There's some trouble for a person with addictive ways, right? What do I do with that? I rest. Look at that. There it is. That's where it stays. All weekend. Maybe I don't think anything's happening because physically I'm not feeling it, I'm not seeing it, but spiritually, there's a lot of downloading. There's a lot of stuff stirring. My dreams are speaking things to me about what God's dealing with. There's a lot going on. But on the outside, it looks like this. This is what it looks like. I do my best fighting like this. I had a dude call me the other day. Honestly, he called me up and said, dude, I got meth buried all around my house. You got to come over and blah, blah, blah. And before, I'd have been sweating bullets, you know, like, I would have gotten in the middle of the struggle. I would have went like, well, I'm not going to take my will back. I'm just going to open this up and kind of look at it. You know, I would have started really getting anxious. Like, here's my opportunity to go use. Dude's got stuff all around. He's wanting me to come get him. All right, I'm not going to take it back. I'm just going to kind of mess around with it. I'm just going to kind of, haven't felt it in a while. You know what I mean? But you know what? Instead of doing that, it was just the most awesome thing. You want to see how I fought? Here's how I fought. Right? My sponsor actually went over there and got him, took him where he needed to go, and I sat at home doing this, fighting. Mighty warrior, just fighting like this. Fighting through rest is a powerful, powerful thing in the spirit. Powerful thing. You know, that's why I so love people in the program and different things where they're learning to fight to stay in right where they are. And me and Glenna experienced many firsts in sobriety. First time we ever went to a wedding, sober. Like, oh, this is weird. You know, you know, that's what we used to look like over there, you know, and that kind of stuff. First big argument where we're clean and not run into drugs, where we stay and actually work it out. First bad weekend, right? Tough day at work. How about this one for me? First injury where I had the excuse I could get some medication and didn't do it, right? A lot of firsts. A lot of firsts, right? And we didn't do that alone. We brought in our the people that have been with us the whole time to counsel us through these times. This has been an amazing adventure. Powerful to leave my will and life in his hands. Now remember, my will and life aren't only here in his heart and his life for me, but his life and his spirit are also living in me. Looks very similar to this in me. God is in me too. This is a powerful thing. And so in the Genesis, they talk a lot about the empty place that we all carry. In that empty place, I tried to stuff with drugs and sex and all these things. God has designed the empty place for relationship with Him and other people. That's the empty place. That's what it's there for. And so we have to learn how to fill that empty place with a relationship with God and a relationship with people that's healthy. And that's a lot of work for people who are used to pushing everybody away and isolating. And so when God does come to live within us, many of us have been shut down. We don't feel. We kind of disassociate. The Lord Himself will come right into your heart and He will turn that breaker on. Bam! You're now connected again. Time to feel, right? And I started feeling my feelings, right? Like, ow, that comment hurt. Not used to feeling that. I feel tired. I probably should sleep instead of just doing more stuff, right? Bugging out. Like, really being a human being again and feeling. Super important. Awesome place. And this whole thing about Him giving me a new identity, I want you to know, I spend a lot of time seeing the way I look to God. I'm a son. I'm your son. What does that look like? I spend a lot of time talking with Him as a son. His broad shoulders, His royal shoulders walking next to mine as I get wise counsel throughout my day. Angels all around. See their shoulders rubbing the trees as I'm walking down my street, real quiet, and I'm walking with the Lord as a son. And I walk with Him, and I see it. I spend a lot of time. Hey, I spend a lot of time seeing myself as a dirtbag. I can finally begin seeing myself and rehearsing that in the self-talk, in my own language, and these words that run through my mind, seeing myself in light of the truth finally. And that's what I do. I spend a lot of time walking with the Lord, really, really quiet. And He has made me okay. And when I say okay, meaning He's made me secure. I'm so loved. I'm totally forgiven. And I'm really important because I'm in His family. And see, so much in conflict resolution is in the fact of, you're okay. So many fights and arguments and things that would make me like turn. I was big on turning tables over and knocking lamps. Like that was a big one for me. Oh yeah. Blah, there goes that lamp. You know, and doing that kind of stuff. Grabbing a table and flipping it over. I used to do that all the time. Like being a big fit thrower. So much has changed when I simply believe the gospel. Like first of all, I'm okay. Second of all, here's the issue. If I'm not okay, I can't really relate to you in a healthy way. So the gospel really has solved so many problems. Last week we talked about the inventory, right? How many were here for that fearless inventory? Wasn't that fearless? That was pretty fearless, wasn't it? That was awesome. Thank you, Drew. Thank you for that fearless thumbs up. And so we saw that even though I have a new identity, I have my old ways of the past. Tendencies towards addiction, weaknesses, things around that still exist in me, in my memories, in my history, and the ways I've learned to deal with life, I still have them. And I learned to take them to God and ask Him to remove my defects of character. And the way God removes my defects of character is by me finally coming to the place where I'm ready to believe that He's already done it. He's already dealt with it on the cross. He's already removed my defects of character in my spirit man as a son of God. And I began to grow and displace those old ways when I was an orphan, scratching and clawing for worth and love. Now I can replace those ways. So we're growing. I am trying to land this plane. I only have a few more notes here. Trying to land this bad boy, right? What kind of chocolate do they serve in airlines? You know what kind of chocolate, Kaylin? Plain chocolate. That was funny. That was funny. Okay, I'll close this out by saying this. We talked about the milk of the word. We talked about the meat of the word. Milk being what? What God has done for us to give us worth, to make me a son. And then the meat of the word is what he's calling me to walk into and begin to do and give back. That's another whole form of growing I need to do. So my soul has been doing what it wants for most of its life. Now I got to learn a brand new way. So I need to learn to be still. He's taught me how to be bored. When nothing seems to be happening, stay with him. Rest. Trust. Being at peace. First of all, knowing I'm okay. It's a powerful thing to walk in peace, because we're walking with the Prince of Peace. So we've learned to be led by God, and in being led by God, you know, it's not about right and wrong. Whatever God has led you to do with your life as a son or daughter of God, it's going to be very unique. If you gave God a personality test, he would have all of them. He would have all of them. You are one facet of a personality representing God. You represent him as you. We get to do that. And I get to do that. So I get to represent him as me. And so I got to learn how to do that. And I remember when Glenna and I started coming to the conclusion, I told a minister here in town, I said, I think my wife and I are called to begin leading a thing called identity, like really giving our lives to this thing called identity. And the guy said, okay, we'll do a little book study in the church. We'll do a little two-week small group, and then that'll be cool. And I said, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. I said, I think God is leading us to give our entire lives to this thing called identity. How crazy is that? Who does that? Is that weird? Like, could you imagine that? Like, we didn't say, let's go with the pros and cons. Like, in other words, the rights and the wrongs. That's the wrong tree again, right? Right and wrong. Knowledge of good and evil. It was, we were being led by God. This is what I want you to do. Will you do this? Trust me. Didn't make sense. And we did it. We stepped out in faith. And it's been the most powerful thing I can ever imagine doing, right? Changing our perspective on things. So, in the end, as healthy identity counselor training, wheels are coming down now, guys. Here we come, right? And then I lift back up again, 3,000 feet. No, I'm kidding. As healthy identity counselor training people, like when we work with people in counseling, I've got two guns, right? And they're very powerful. First gun, it's the gun that gets me out of most things. The first gun, I'm loved. Bottom line, live loved. I'm loved. Bottom line, no matter what I'm facing, whatever the enemy throws at me, whatever's going on, I pull this gun, I'm loved. Deal with it, right? That's my first gun. My second gun we all carry, and we just heard a hint of it from Kim, and I want you to know that's dangerous stuff you got. I felt the power of it. The second gun is your testimony, your story. It's completely unique. It's so powerful. I've had so many people come and tell me, Stan, you can't do what you're doing. You can't say this. You can't do this. You can't be where you are. And first of all, I'm loved, because that hurt. Second of all, let me tell you my story, dude. Let me tell you where we're coming from. Let me tell you about what God's done for me. Let me tell you about the power of the fact that I'm standing here talking to you. Let me tell you, right? Boom. My testimony. Nobody can touch it. Nobody can stop it. No one can take it. It's me and the Lord. As we walk shoulder to shoulder and we talk and we work this out, and he tells me what to do and he gives me advice. He tells me how loved I am. Leads me to my next chapter, right? Gives me more bullets, right? My testimony is so unique. It's just like a key that God has given me to help other people. And your key, your story is so powerful. Who can argue with that? Who can touch that? Like, that is so powerful. I felt it, right? Right? First of all, I'm loved. Let's get that straight. Second of all, let me lay on you my story. This is my story. Boom. Love it. The darkness flees. It trembles, right? And a long part of our story is walking through that desert time as he's developing it. You know what it's like to be bored? Do you know what it's like to walk in a wilderness? Do you know what it's like to feel like God's not doing anything, nothing's happening? Trust him. Keep walking. You're walking through that time. Your skin's getting thicker. You're growing in the spirit. Powerful. I love it. I don't want to do anything else. So the reason that you're still here on this planet right now, the reason you right now have a heartbeat, is because God still has some things for you to do. Now, I want you to know, guys, the way you're going to know that God's done with Stan Boren is he's going to take me home. He's going to take me home. He's going to say, Stan, you're done. Good job. He's going to call me home. What a glorious thing that's going to be. He's going to call me home. I can't wait. But guess what? I woke up this morning, so he still got things for me to do. Right? And I want you to know, take this to the bottom of your heart. If you're alive and breathing right now, he's got some very important things for you to do. Super important. And trust me, you'll know when you're done. You'll know when you're done, because he'll take you home. And so that's the reason we're here. So all your suffering right now on this earth is for the Lord, all of it, because that's why we're here, to serve him. So all my suffering is for him. And when I'm done suffering, he's going to take me home. And we get to ride with Jesus. We get to ride with him. But until then, I'm going to live by faith. Faith in the Son of God. What he's done for me, I could never do for myself. What has he done? He's made me a son. I'm a son, guys. I walk as a son. And I hope that you would walk as a daughter. What does he want from you right now? What he wants from you right now more than anything else is for you to believe him when he says, you're loved, you're forgiven, and you're so important. And to go, and Lord, to fight that way. Let me pray. Father, I just thank you for Kim's story tonight. I'm very touched by this. And all of our stories represented here tonight. Thank you for this special group that came out, instead of going to the Super Bowl, they came here to be together with us. And I just want to thank you for that. It means so much to us. I just pray right now that we would tonight, as we lay down, get ready to go to sleep, we think about what it means to be a son and a daughter. What it means to be yours. What it means to be a son. What it means to be a member of your family. Powerful. It's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing. And I pray we would actually fall asleep in the Spirit. Be in the Spirit. It's who we are. It's who we are. Thank you, Father. In Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, guys. That closes out the Healthy Identity Counselor Training. Didn't.